Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
So the CDC director's in town. It's the one-year anniversary of the COVID-19 outbreak at the state-run Holyoke Soldiers Home. The pandemic is on our minds here in the Commonwealth, so let's keep our focus there and answer your questions. Any you might have about vaccines, the rollout, reopening, what to expect moving forward over these next few weeks and months. It is time for Ask the Doctors. And you can call 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We have two doctors joining us. Dr. Shira Durone is an infectious disease physician and hospital epidemiologist at Tufts Medical Center. And Dr. Joshua Barocas is an infectious diseases physician at Boston Medical Center and assistant professor of medicine at the Boston University, School of Medicine. Dr. Durone, welcome.
Great to be back.
Dr. Barocas, great to have you back too.
Thanks for having me, as always.
So Dr. Durone, let me start with you and get your responses to what we heard a little earlier in the show. Dr. Walensky at the Heinz Convention Center today, not calling out the Commonwealth, but also saying yesterday that she's worried we could be headed toward doom.
Well, I can't say I'm not worried. We had been seeing this precipitous drop in cases really throughout the entire country in January and February. We didn't really understand why that was happening. So by the same token, now that we're seeing rises in some parts of the country, but not others, it's really baffling, I think, that this virus continues to humble us because we don't really understand why this is happening right now.
So Dr. Durone, I guess I'm a little surprised to hear that even at this stage a year later, when we see things go down and we see them go up, we don't really know why.
Yeah, I mean, we think that we understand the association between human behavior and rising cases, but we also have these factors that are sort of coming to light of perhaps seasonality, perhaps some level of community immunity. And we thought all those things were perhaps at play when the numbers started to fall so drastically in January and February. The fact that they're turning a corner and going back upward only in certain parts of the country really tells us, you know, it's never quite as clear as it appears to be. Here you have states that have dropped mask mandates and opened wide up, like Texas, not experiencing increases in cases. And you have the Northeast, where we think we've been pretty good and well-behaved for an entire year now with cases rising. It's disheartening.
So Dr. Barocas, how do we then tell people what to do to stay on track when nationally we look at this data, just as Dr. Durone was just saying, and things seem to be sort of in backward world?
Yeah, I look at it. It's funny that you mentioned backward world. As Dr. Durone was talking, I was imagining one of those bouncy balls sort of hitting every wall of a room, just bouncing every which way. And that's sort of, I think, how most people feel these days, is their attention is being pulled one way or the other. You know, I know that it's we end up sounding like broken records, right? And that what we're asking for is some consistency. I think we've seen that when we have consistent policies in a region or in a state or in a country or in the country, then we do start to see some leveling out. You know, the viruses don't always follow the nice patterns that, or temporal patterns, or we don't necessarily see the patterns right away, which is why so many of us have, you know, whether on this show or on many others, have tried to maintain a consistent, unified message of the same mitigation techniques, same mitigation methods that we've been preaching for a year, simply because so much of this is a little bit unpredictable. So if we can take one of those unpredictable things out of the equation, then maybe we get to some more predictability.
Well, our callers are ready, so let's go to the phones here. 800-423-8255 to ask Drs. Derone and Barocas your questions. We'll start with Alex, who's in Northborough. Alex, go ahead.
Hi. My question is that I'm fully vaccinated. My husband's fully vaccinated, and our 12-year-old son just tested positive for COVID. When the health department contacted us, we were told we did not have to quarantine. But my question is, how likely are we to transmit COVID if we ourselves end up being positive, given that we both are at least 2 weeks past our vaccination times?
Dr. Derone, can I give that to you, please?
Sure. So congratulations on being fully vaccinated and maximally immune. Now, you know that no vaccine is perfect, but the vaccines that we have, we are so lucky because they're extremely effective. And the storybook is finally clear that the vaccines are very effective at both preventing symptomatic disease and asymptomatic sort of carrier state. You can feel pretty confident in your vaccine. Now, nothing was ever 100% when it came to quarantine. The CDC had dropped the requirement to 7 days with a test. That wasn't perfect in preventing someone from going out at the end of quarantine and infecting other people. And the vaccine isn't perfect, but it's pretty darn good. And I think you can feel confident both taking care of your son and then going out in the world, of course, with excellent masking, distancing, and all of those other precautions that you're probably very good at by now.
Let's pick up another call at 800-423-8255. We've got Teddy on the line in Medford. Teddy, what's your question?
Yes, my question is, my kids are going to go back to school starting next week, next Monday. What should I worry about as a parent watching the case increase over the past couple of weeks and with the change to the new variant? What should I be concerned about and what should I be looking out for?
Thanks, Teddy. Dr. Barocas.
Well, I'm glad to hear that that your child is headed back to school. I know that many kids around the Commonwealth are excited about that. And I know that many teachers are as well. I think that a couple things, most, if not all of the schools and school districts around the state are following fairly good guidelines as far as distancing, time without masks, and all of the things that we've been doing as a society for the last year. To look out for, you know, I think that we want to make sure that your child or anyone's child isn't exhibiting any symptoms that might be classic for a symptomatic infection at this point. So sore throat, runny nose, fevers, feeling just muscle aches, body aches. And this can get a little bit tricky right now because we are also headed into allergy season.
Right.
So we want to make sure that if symptoms happen to be popping up, you're doing a good job at alerting the schools, the school district, and they should have a protocol in place. On the way home, it's always good, you know, that we always talk about the car ride or the backseat conversations where kids tell us some of the stuff that we wouldn't otherwise hear. So just be on the lookout for what your child is telling you in between breaths. Sometimes they'll mention that, you know, I noticed that so-and-so next to me was coughing a lot today. That's one of those cases where you might just want to send the teacher an email and double check or figure out what's going on. I think that all of us are remaining fairly vigilant, and especially when kids come into play, we want to make sure that nobody's having symptoms. That's our best defense right now, and that they have excellent masking, that your kids know how to keep that mask over both nostrils and a mouth.
So I'm going to go back to the phones in a minute. But before I do, Dr. Daron, I want to come back to you for a second. With our previous caller, you congratulated them on having such an effective vaccine. And I want to ask you a question there. The CDC has a new study out that showed that the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines were 90% effective at preventing infections in a study that was, rather than in clinical trial settings, sort of in everyday settings. And that included infections that had no symptoms. So I'd like you to tell us a little bit about the implications of those findings. And can you tell us whether that setting this time around included exposure to the variants? Because I know the earlier clinical trials, the thought was perhaps Moderna and Pfizer might be a little less effective than how they showed in clinical trials because they really weren't introduced in the context of the variants.
So, you know, the study that was published by the CDC is actually one of many studies that have come out really in the past month that show both experimental and real world success of the vaccines in preventing asymptomatic infection. We have real world data from Israel, which is way ahead of us in terms of vaccinating a high proportion of the population, where they have 90% B117 variant that originated in the UK, showing prevention of asymptomatic infection as well as symptomatic infection. I think that it's pretty clear that the vaccines that we have are very effective against the B117 variant. The concern is the South Africa variant, and the vaccines are going to be somewhat less effective. So they're still going to be very effective against at preventing severe disease, hospitalization, and death. They would probably be less effective, although we don't have data specifically on this, against mild disease and therefore less effective against asymptomatic disease and silent carriage.
All right. You are listening to Ask the Doctors here on Radio Boston. The number to ask your question is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Ray is on the line from Avon. Ray, what's your question?
My question was, I got the Moderna shot. I got both of them now, and the last one a couple of weeks ago. And then I heard on the radio this morning, the protection on these shots is up to 3 months. And I'm like, 3 months? When do I have to get another shot in 3 months? Do they have any idea how long that I'm protected for? Is it longer than 3 months? That's my
question. Good question, Ray. Dr. Barocas, can you help us with that one?
Yeah, and before I do, I'm going to add to Dr. Daron's congratulations and also a thank you. And I think that everyone that is getting vaccinated, thank you for getting those two shots in the case of Pfizer and Moderna and the one shot in the case of Johnson & Johnson. I think everyone deserves a lot of praise to get that. Now, as far as the 3 months, all of that is because that's how long the data that we have exist for. You know, when we look at how long immunity lasts for things like our measles shots, it's part of that is because we've had measles shots for so long that we've been able to figure out how long people have protection from that shot. We are still in the learning phase of the vaccine phase of this pandemic. Remember that this coronavirus popped up just a little bit over a year ago here in the United States. The vaccines were, while we started testing them mid-year, we really only have about 3 months. The clinical trials really only lasted for about 3 months in the later phases. And so all of that is based on the best knowledge that we have to date. Now, would I be surprised if in, you know, a few months we say, oh, good, your immunity lasts longer than 3 months? I would not be surprised. But right now, we're trying to do this. We're trying to message using a data-driven approach. And the data that we have say that our vaccines are effective for at least 3 months, and we will continue to evaluate the data longer.
Okay, so So the message is not only 3 months. It's that we know definitively at this point 3 months, and hopefully as we
at
go
least,
longer,
yeah, I'd like, we'll I like to longer. Use the at least. We know that it's good at for least. At least 3 months. We're looking forward to data that shows us longer.
Yes,
and just... the CDC and the Mass DPH quietly took that 3 month limit off of their quarantine rules, so that the limit is no longer listed on the website.
All right, good to know. Let's go back to the phones here, 800-423-8255 to ask your question. Carol's on the line from Mansfield. Carol, what's your question?
My question is that both my husband and I had the coronavirus. 4 days later, we got the monoclonal antibodies, and that was about 60 days ago. Now, I was able to sign up and get a shot, which would be about 62 days after the virus, and I know they say we should wait for 90. My second shot would be a little bit over 90 days. Am I wise in getting the shot that I signed up for on this coming Saturday, which would be about 62 days since the antibodies?
Carol, I'm glad you're okay. Which doctor would like to answer Carol's question?
Well, I can try. The recommendation is that if you've had monoclonal antibody, you should wait 90 days before you get a COVID-19 vaccine. And again, this is a sort of expert opinion, kind of a data-free zone. But the concern is that the monoclonal antibody infusion could prevent your body from making the appropriate immune response to the vaccine. Now, you've already got some of your own natural immunity that it has built as a result of the infection. So it's not clear whether having gotten it earlier than 60 days is an actual would result in sort of actual decreasing of your immune response to the vaccine. It's not recommended, but it's probably okay.
So Dr. Barocas, Dr. Daron there was just talking to Carol about her natural immunity from having had COVID-19. And I want to ask a question. It's a little bit of an awkward question, but I think it's out there. So we now have, we continue to have, you know, between 50 and 60,000 cases in the United States a day. We know that here in the Commonwealth, the fastest growing rates of cases are among younger people. It is bad, but also less deadly for younger people than older adults who are increasingly being vaccinated in the Commonwealth. Where is our monitoring of herd immunity through both vaccination, but also people who are developing natural immunity from being exposed to the virus? And how do we put all of that into context?
That's a great question. So I think that there are a few components, two to three components that I want to keep in mind. The first is we have been talking about the idea of herd immunity, which for many of the listeners, it means that that level of immunity in a population where we are effectively able to eliminate a disease or a virus in this case, because so many people have either been vaccinated or have natural immunity because they've been infected and survived, that it effectively protects the rest of the population that perhaps hasn't been infected or vaccinated. We are beginning this discussion of, will we actually reach herd immunity? Or will we have some amount of, will this become an endemic virus where we sort of learn to live with it? And much like we do the seasonal influenza, a number of factors are at play here. The first is what we consider the herd. And right now, I think we have all started to realize, at least in the public health world, that since we're all connected, you know, via planes, you know, what happens in the United States and boats and whatnot, what happens in the United States is not solely within the United States. So we really, to really achieve a good herd immunity level, we have to think beyond our own borders. The other component is in order to really reach that 70%, which or the 60 to 70% herd immunity that many of us have tossed around for the last year, that's going to include getting younger people vaccinated. So we are still a bit away from that, simply because younger children, 16 and younger, aren't actually eligible for the vaccine. That's not to be the skunk at the party. I think that it's very possible that we might, in fact, end up hitting that 65-70%, at least in the United States. But I do want to encourage everyone that this goes beyond our own borders, and what happens globally affects us locally as well.
Well, I want to point out that neither of you is ever a skunk at the party, especially for coming so generously over and over again to answer our questions. Listeners, we're not going to get to more calls today, but as usual, we will do this again. For now, I want to thank, that was Dr. Joshua Barocas, an infectious diseases physician at Boston Medical Center, an assistant professor of medicine at the Boston University School of Medicine, as well as Dr. Shira Durone, an infectious disease physician and hospital epidemiologist at Tufts Medical Center. Dr. Durone, Dr. Barocas, thanks so much.
Thank you.